So I don't know about you, but the older I get, the faster the years seem to go by. Time does that. Speeds up and slows down in mysterious ways. I mean, a minute is always 60 seconds, but it can seem like forever if you're waiting online. Or it can seem like nothing at all if you're also playing Angry Birds. Science journalist Claudia Hammond explains some of these mysteries in a book called Time Warped. Among them, why we are so drawn to thinking about the future.
We spend a lot of time thinking about the future. And so if you put people in a brain scanner and get them to think of nothing and you say, just don't think of anything at all or stare at this cross that's on the screen, one of the most common things for people to do is to think about the future. Even if it's just what they're going to eat that night, you can't help but plan ahead. And so it's almost as if it's a kind of default mode. If the mind's not doing anything important, it's going to think about the future instead.
That's fascinating that our default is to think about the future, not the present. Doesn't that seem sort of like a shame?
Well, it's a useful thing. You know, people will often say, oh, they're trying desperately to be in the moment. But it's no accident that we do think about the future. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Humans have always been very good at planning ahead, of wondering, oh, why don't we tomorrow we'll go and see what's over the other side of that hill, you know, have that curiosity and plan for things. And this has been, many would argue, part of humans' success. And so we are, unlike other animals, particularly good at planning, particularly good at planning ahead and working out what we're going to do. And so we need to think about the future. It's a good thing.
I guess the question is whether it makes us happy or unhappy. I mean, we all visualize the future in many different ways. Seems like half my time I spend worrying about the future.
Yes, I mean, that is the trouble. If your thinking becomes obsessed with worrying about the bad things, then obviously, you know, that's not going to be such a good thing. There does tend to be a bit of an optimism bias in that a lot of the time we think better things will happen in the future. I mean, one of the things people think about the future is that they will have more spare time. And there is no evidence that we'll have any more spare time in the future. We like to think we'll be kind of better organised versions of ourselves and be able to get more things done. In fact, unfortunately, that's quite unlikely unless you know, decide to do something differently. But this is the reason why the planning fallacy is so common, where you think you can get something done much more quickly than you can. So even if it's, you know, that you think you can build yourself a kitchen in a weekend and, you know, 3 weeks later you still haven't even got a sink put in. Government procurement projects will overrun by miles and miles because we all think we'll have more time in the future and be more organised and better.
Mm. So what actually goes on in the brain when we visualise or think about the future?
Well, it's really interesting because one of the things that we're particularly good at is mental time travel, if you like. And this is a thing that we think other animals can't do. So some animals can plan where they, say, bury food, hide food for winter. But what they can't do is to throw themselves mentally into the future, whereas we can do that. And so we can time travel at will, if you like, in our minds. You know, I can say, imagine that next week you're going on a red double-decker bus to a Caribbean island to go to, I don't know, some famous film star, Johnny Depp's wedding or something like that. And I tell you to imagine you're doing that next weekend. You can already picture those things.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing is that what you're doing in order to picture those things is you are putting together little fragments of past memories. It's almost like you're sort of cutting together all those little film clips of having seen a red double-decker bus and Johnny Depp and all those different things and putting them all together. You're building the future out of the past. And this actually is one of the reasons, I think, why our memories can be so fallible. So we will, you know, curse the fact that we can't remember everything as well as we might like to be able to. And obviously, that becomes particularly important when it's, say, witnesses to crimes. And there's been loads of experiments showing how, in certain circumstances, it's easy to get a witness in experiments to become unreliable and to think they might have seen things they haven't even. And yet, the reason for this is so that we can splice together, if you like, these little bits of memories to be able to think of the future. And so there are really interesting parallels between future thinking and thinking about the past, to the extent that people with certain sorts of amnesia also find it difficult to imagine the future. They've done experiments where they ask people to imagine that they're going to a museum at the weekend and they say, what do you think the museum might look like inside? People with amnesia will find that very, very difficult to imagine what that museum might look like, even though it's something they're conjuring out of their imagination. But we know that the areas of the brain are very, very similar that do those different things.
But that's fascinating because, for instance, what if you take somebody who's had a miserable past, an unhappy childhood, are they likely to, when they construct their particular vision of the future, construct an unhappy vision of the future?
Well, not necessarily. It's interesting. I mean, some people will still be optimistic despite what has happened to them. They will be very hopeful that things will be better. Others, you know, you can get pessimists who've had perfectly happy lives but who are convinced everything's going to go wrong from now on. Or you sometimes hear people say that they think it's better to look not on the bright side, if you like, on the dark side, because then they won't be disappointed if things don't turn out the way they want. Then they'll be pleasantly surprised instead. So you can also get people almost using it as a deliberate coping strategy to try to be more pessimistic about the future.
So are you saying that when we visualize the future, we're actually using the same part of our brains that we use to store our memories?
Yes, there's quite good evidence for that, that several of the same parts of the brain will be used for that. And so those parts of the brain are also ones that if they get damaged, then it will be difficult for people to think of the future. And they're also little, very small children don't have such rich autobiographical memories, memories of their own things that they've been doing, as older children and adults do. And the same thing happens with little children. They find it hard to imagine the future. So in one experiment, they asked children who were 4 years old to suggest what they might do the next day. And then they asked their parents to judge whether this was a plausible thing that they might do the next day. And it was allowed to be exciting if they wanted. They could say they might be going to the zoo next day in hope. But fewer than half of them were actually able to pitch themselves forward into the future to imagine something plausible at all. They almost didn't have that skill yet of imagining the future, just as they also didn't have the same memory skills as we do. And another experiment that I really like with children, they gave children some salty pretzels to eat, and then they asked them, would they like some water or some more pretzels? And the children would choose water. And then they say to them, what would you like now? And they say they'd like some more pretzels. And they say, tomorrow, if we'd given you some pretzels, what will you choose to have next tomorrow? And they can't imagine that they might feel thirsty tomorrow. So instead, they say that what they'd like tomorrow is more pretzels. Whereas if you ask the adults, they can predict that what they want is the pretzels and then the water and then the pretzels. But the small children can't.
Huh. So as we age, we get better at predicting and imagining the future.
Yeah, we do. Through childhood, we definitely get better at it. But we don't all see it in the same way. There's this brilliant question. I could ask you this question, which is, if I were to say to you, there's a meeting on Wednesday, but Wednesday's meeting is being moved forward 2 days, what day do you think Wednesday's meeting is now? There are two possible answers to that question. What would you say for that?
Friday.
So Wednesday's meeting's being moved forward. You say Friday. I'd immediately say Monday. And if you ask a big room of people, this question completely splits the room. Half will say Monday and half will say Friday. And people will all turn to each other and say, don't be stupid. Of course it can't be that.
It can't be. You said you'd move the meeting forward. That means
forwards.
The meeting's moving forward. It's advancing to Friday.
Yeah, and some people will think, that means the time is moving forward instead. And so the meeting is coming nearer. And so, I mean, I've often had this with talking about, you know, radio programs with my boss. And my boss will say, that program you're doing, it's been moved forward a month. And I'll go, no, I don't know if I've got time. I don't know if I've got time. She'll say, I thought you would be pleased. It's a month away. You've got a month longer. And I say, no, it doesn't mean that. And these represent two different ways that people look at time. And so the people who answer Monday, like me, this is known as the time-moving metaphor. And it's the idea that you see yourself at a point in time and the future is coming towards you. So, you know, spring is coming or the summer is coming or Christmas is coming. You're standing still and it's coming towards you. Mm. People who answer Friday, like you, that metaphor is the ego-moving metaphor. And they see themselves as moving off into the future and that they're the ones that they're going off towards the time that's ahead of them. And so they see it another way. But what's amazing is even that can change. And so with things we're dreading, like going to the dentist, people are much more likely to then change their answer and say Monday because they're seeing the dentist appointment as coming towards them. There's nothing you can do about it. It's getting nearer and nearer and it's coming to get you, if you like.
The other thing you said that's so fascinating is that you were talking about how much of what we imagine in the future is based on kind of remixed from the past. And yet our past memories are so fallible. I mean, to a certain extent, our vision of the past, our memory of the past, is also fictional.
Yes, and I think in a way it's fallible in one sense, but in one sense the fragments are kind of there. We just can't necessarily get them in the right way at the right moments. But I think we do need it to be like that in order to be able to mix it all up to think about the future, because the imagination about the future is so important that it's more important that we can do that than that our memories are perfect. And of course, also, we don't want to remember every single thing we did. There isn't time, if you like. You know, we haven't got the ability to almost have enough room to remember everything we did. We need to just remember the important bits or we'd be overloaded.
Mm. I guess the next biggest question really is, how much control can we have or gain over this entire process? I mean, for instance, one of the things that I most dislike about aging is how time seems to speed up. I can remember how long a year used to seem when I was a child. You know, it would take forever for summer vacation to arrive. And now it's just a year goes by in a snap. I feel like I'm racing toward death, which isn't a good feeling. Is there a way I could slow that down?
It is interesting, our time in our lives, because we look at time in two ways. And there's a thing I call the holiday paradox, where if you go on holiday and it's a good holiday and you're busy, then the holiday seems to go far too fast. Say it's a week's holiday, you get halfway through the holiday and it's already time to think about packing and coming home again. But then when you get home, it feels as if you've been away from work for much longer than a week, and it will even work with just a weekend. And that's because we look at time in two ways. So we look at it prospectively. We say, how fast is it going right now? Am I bored? Am I interested? What's going on? And then we also look back and say, how fast did yesterday feel? And our memories and the number of new memories we make will have a real difference here. So the holiday seems to go fast at the time because you're busy and that's nice. And then you've made loads and loads of new memories. Possibly you might have seen 10, 15 new things each day. So when you look back, compared with a normal routine week, you've made all these memories, so it feels very, very long. So if you apply that to your life, if you want your life to seem long, then what you need to do is to be busy and to fill it up, and to fill it up with new things all the time. So at the weekend, don't keep going to the same restaurant or same bar, say, and don't, you know, just hang around. You do have to trade rest for this, but what you need to do is go and do lots of new things. So do something new on Saturday morning, something else new on Saturday afternoon, something else you've never done before, or a place you've not been to in the evening, walk somewhere different. And when you get to Monday morning, it will feel as if the weekend was long. And that's the same with life. So in a way, when people worry about time going too fast, all the situations where time goes slowly, if you think back to the people feeling rejected, we know that when people are feeling depressed, time goes twice as slowly. When people are feeling lonely, time goes more slowly. So when people say, oh, I really want things to slow down, I sort of question, do we really want that? Because actually, those aren't necessarily the situations we really want. If time seems to be all racing away from you, then that could be a good sign that you're doing lots of things, you're really busy. And when you look back, you will have lots and lots of memories, and it will feel like a long, long life.
Claudia Hammond is a science journalist and host of the BBC Radio 4 programs All in the Mind and Mind Changers. For more about the mysteries of time perception, look for her book Time Warped,